Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in northern Indiana and earned a BS degree in marketing from Indiana University. He's the founder and president of Life Remodeled, which will be repurposing Durfee Middle Elementary School into a community innovation center focused on entrepreneurship, education, and community, and beautifying over 300 surrounding blocks. These renovations will be completed in 6 days, utilizing at least 12,000 volunteers. His name? Chris Lambert. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Chris Lambert, the founder and president of Life Remodeled. Chris, welcome back. A real honor to have you.
Jack Rasula, you know, I have much love and respect for you, and it's an honor to be back on your show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
What do you want to know? So I have a wonderful mother and father who raised me in a very small town in northern Indiana. When I say small, I mean we didn't have a stoplight until I was in middle school, and it was a blinking light at that. So believe me, that was a big deal for our small town. And my mom and dad really just did a phenomenal job nurturing my sister and I with a lot of self-esteem and an attitude that would say you can do anything that you want to do in the world. But for me, my story is a very spiritual one in that my parents actually would take us to church about half the year, but we didn't talk about God or Jesus in particular in the home very often at all. Yet for me, I had a pretty dramatic faith in Christ ever since I can remember, which then there's a lot of twists and turns to that story, but that's how I grew up.
Speaking of twists and turns, tell us about your life, Chris Lambert, from age 16 to 22.
At the age of 16, I hit a growth spurt, and I became one of those big fish in a small pond, right? I became pretty successful at athletics, and I started to look around at some of my buddies who were having what I thought at the time a lot more fun than me and my little youth group. And so I decided that one day I was going to become a little bit more like them. And Jack, I don't know if I've told you this part of the story, but it's kind of ridiculous. So I decided I would start cussing. Okay, I grew up in this small town. I'm this Jesus freak kid. I just didn't cuss up until this point in my life. And I decided I was going to do that to be a little bit more like my buddies. And I remember distinctly, I'm driving down a country road in my Jeep Wagoneer. I pull down my visor and I looked up at it. And I won't tell you what I said, but it started with an S, right? Me being who I am, I'm an all or nothing kind of person. I'm all in or I'm all out. So I go to school the next day and I find a way to work in the F word about every third word. And so all of a sudden, all the kids at school, in the school of about 1,200 kids, they were looking around at me like, what in the world has happened to Lambert? I thought he was the Jesus freak. And so that was funny for a minute, but as time got by, I looked for the next adventure, and that for me was a life of going after women or girls at the time, and basketball. And then that was fun for a while, and then I had to mix it up, so I added in alcohol and very large amounts of alcohol, and then all of a sudden I added in drugs. Then I went off to Indiana University to study business, join a fraternity, and get more of all of the above.
In 2002... you moved to Australia to study.
I studied overseas in Australia for 6 months, and while I was there, had a radical, dramatic encounter with God. It involved a number of factors. A big factor was the fact that I was traveling around to various countries and realizing the world's a very big place, and I am just this little bitty speck of dust. And so that was humbling and set me up for one night when I happened to meet some good friends who went to church service. They took me to this church service, an Anglican church, and the pastor preached a sermon that basically outlined my life to a T, of someone who was following God and walked away from him and took life into his own hands. The next thing that happened to me that night was I felt like God spoke to me internally, not audibly, but I felt like he was saying to me that I was not hot or cold, and he was about to spit me out of his mouth. And I'm sure you're familiar that that's a passage in the Bible in the book of Revelation. It wasn't one that the pastor had said that night, but I remember reading it as a kid. And if there's ever such a thing as being spiritually sober, that was it for me. I wasn't on a drug or alcohol at that moment, but I was spiritually sober, and that's not what changed my life, that passage or that thought. What changed my life was over the next few seconds, I saw visually that God had let me do pretty much everything that I'd wanted to do from the ages of 16 to 22, and I pretty much got everything that I wanted. But then it just hit me clear as day that I had never, during those 6 years of my life, been as happy or as satisfied as I was when I was a Jesus freak. So for some reason, it was just clear as a bell. What am I doing? This whole time, I've just tried to be happy. So I went up to the front of the church. The pastor gave one of those altar call deals. I got down on my knees. I remember exactly what I said. I said, God, from this day forward, I will stop doing whatever you want me to stop doing, and I will start doing whatever you want me to start doing.
And evidently, he told you he wanted you to become a minister, a salesman for himself.
So I moved back to my fraternity my senior year. And incidentally, coincidentally, of course, as you and I know, there are no coincidences. Four of my good friends had all become Christ followers. One of them while he was in jail for selling methamphetamines. All of them are amazing men of God to this day. We got this Bible study thing going in the fraternity. We're leading guys to follow Jesus out of these crazy lifestyles. We had about 10 to 15 guys every week. And all of a sudden I realized, I don't want to go to law school anymore. I don't want to go into this life of becoming a land developer as I saw it at the time. I think God's calling me to be a pastor. So I moved out to California, studied seminary, and the rest is history.
We're talking to Chris Lambert, who in a sense has become a land developer or a redeveloper. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Chris Lambert, who after seminary, you and your wife, Andrea, go to Africa. Why and what happened?
Well, as you know, there's a tremendous amount of need in Africa. And at that point in my life, I had actually become very moved to help those who are in the worst situations in life. And that really, a lot of that came through my wife, who led that way. She used to work on Skid Row in California and Los Angeles and ministered to drug addicts and alcoholics. And we happened to come across this movie called Invisible Children, which was a true story, a documentary about kids in northern Uganda who were actually being stolen from their parents, forced to fight in a war in South Sudan in northern Uganda, led by a man named Joseph Kony. And they were called the Invisible Children because really nobody knew about them, but the fact that over 20,000 kids were being taken, that movie really sealed the deal for my wife and I, where we felt like we need to go to Africa and do whatever we can. So we ended up spending 9 months, 2 months in Uganda and 7 months in Liberia.
Whenever I've met somebody that has worked with the really, really poor in third world countries, they always say that they've learned much more from the poor than they ever did from the rich. Mm. Why?
The joy that you will encounter in Africa will blow you away. People in this country would literally pay millions of dollars for the joy that we saw amongst the poorest of the poor. And it's something you can describe and something that you can't describe, right? And where the people that we found were able to find joy in the simplest things and just living and being and doing. And so absolutely, that taught me a tremendous amount about my own joy. Where does my happiness come from? And I found it to be a very educational experience.
You and Andrea come back, and in 2011, you start Life Remodeled. Tell us about that journey.
There was a television show called Extreme Makeover Home Edition, and I'm not afraid to admit that I cried every single time that I watched it. But I'd always think to myself, I'm not so sure this is the best thing to do for these families, to give them these very large, what you might even call gaudy homes, and then do nothing more. And then I'd come to learn that anywhere between 17 and 25% of families were actually losing their homes within the first 2 to 5 years of getting them after Extreme Makeover Home Edition. So the original concept of Life Remodeled started off as a wild conversation where a buddy of mine asked me if I had ever done a reality, if I had ever thought of doing a reality TV show before. I told him no, and his name's Alex McManus. Alex said to me, I've got this concept for a show kind of like Clean House, and I think you'd be really good at it. And I said to him, no, I don't like that show. If I was ever going to do a show, it would be more like Extreme Makeover Home Edition, but more holistic. I had no intention of actually doing it, but as I left that conversation, I kept thinking about it. Came up with the original concept, which was build a house in 6 days, give it away to a low-income family for free, take the family through financial training and set them up with a financial advisor, also set the family up with a clinical psychologist for free to process any family dynamics, offer spiritual guidance, which they could accept or reject, and then also invest in the surrounding neighborhood, not just one home. 2 weeks went by. During that time, I still was not serious about doing it until I felt like God spoke to me again and said, do it. And there were really two very clear reasons why. One was that I knew it would make a significant impact in the lives of people living in poverty. But the second thing that I knew that it would do is it would bring people together to work together, no matter what their values may be on religion, on politics, on moral lifestyles, things that often divide people and keep us in our separate ways, that if Extreme Makeover Home Edition came to town and said, hey, Jack, can you hold this 2x4 for me? You're going to say yes. And so I decided to go for it. At the time, I pastored this small blue-collar church in Westland with less than 200 people, about $8,000 in the bank, and no influence. We had zero probability of pulling this off. This idea came in April 2010, and we executed everything I just told you in April of 2011.
And you built a few such homes, and then a few years later, God told you to make 3 changes.
In 2013, we moved to the city of Detroit with the same style project that I just mentioned. Coming out of that project, there were really 2 things that we realized that I felt like God was saying. One was we needed to stay exclusively within the city limits of Detroit. The second thing I realized was we needed to stop building new houses for families. And the reason is because the families are doing great to this day, but the neighbors don't really get too excited about one family getting a brand new house for free. Duh. Why would the neighbors get excited about that? So hindsight's 20/20, but I felt like God was saying, we need to do something that everyone can benefit from. So I took it to our board of directors, and I'd actually heard about a church in Portland that had helped a school and did a project there. So I said to our board, what if we remodel schools? No one on the board, including myself, knew anyone at Detroit Public Schools. We said, well, let's feel it out and see where it goes. This was in the fall of 2013. Made a cold call to Detroit Public Schools. Within 2 weeks, I'm sitting in the office with the 3 top leaders at the time. I cast this vision, telling them, I can't prove we can deliver it, but here's what we want to do. We want to remodel a school. We want to repair at least 20 homes, and we want to clean up 300 city blocks in 6 days. At the time, the school district was about $500 million in debt. So guess what? It didn't have anything to lose. So it said, sure, go for it. Less than a year later, we pull off a $5.5 million project at Cody High School.
Joy Road in Southfield, part of that renovation was you built the football field for them, and you cleaned hundreds of blocks. Talk about that football field.
So when we go to a school, we ask the principals, what do you need? Right? We don't come into a neighborhood with preconceived ideas. And we asked the school to create a list of everything that they needed, which they did. And it was a long, exhaustive list. And I made sure to remind them over and over, we can't promise we can do anything on this list. But I can promise you, I'll tell everyone I know, and we'll see who comes to the table and what God does. Then they prioritized the list, 1 to 20, of the things that were most important. At the top of that list was the football field. And when they told me that, my heart started to beat a little bit because I like sports. I like football. I said, why a football field? They explained to me that they had not had a home football field in 6 seasons. They played every game away, including homecoming. I tried to figure out how you do that, right? And they said the football field would not only be a major blessing to the football team and encourage the kids, but it could bring the school together, and it could even create a place where the community could come together and celebrate victories, come together through relationships. And I just saw it. The moment they began to really explain it, I realized, okay, we're going to do everything we can to help you build this football field.
Cody is now 3 academies. Okay, I understand that, but Chris, why remodel 100-plus blocks around Cody?
So we all have probably been familiar with the images that we've seen in the news of much of the blight in Detroit. And Jack, I know you've seen it personally, as have most of your listeners who live in the area. And of course, blight is an unsightly problem. It's something that no one enjoys looking at. But it's more than just a problem to the eyes, and even it's a problem to the soul, right? But it's a problem for crime. Because these vacant properties, of which not too long ago there were over 80,000, all right, are magnets for criminal activity, for drug use, for prostitution, and even for human trafficking, where girls have been taken on their way to school. And so reducing blight, actually, just like the broken window theory that we heard out of New York, does reduce crime.
We're talking to Chris Lambert. If you want to learn more, www.liferemodeledwithaned.com. Liferemodeled.com. When we come back, we're going to ask him how he ever got 10,000 people to commit 7 days, late July, August, in 2014. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, founder and president, Life Remodeled, Chris Lambert. Chris, how did you ever convince 10,000 volunteers to help you for a week?
So one of the things I try to do is not convince people to do anything, but to invite them and let God do the convincing. And I think that's how we ended up with 10,000 people. So what we did is we just continued to tell the story of the strengths in Cody Rouge, the assets in Cody Rouge, the fact that this school had turned their graduation rates around from under 50% to over 80% in just under 5 years. And I talked about how much the kids are passionate about their school and their education and their future and their neighborhood. And what happened is people from churches, from businesses, from the local city government, and just around the region began to beat their hearts to this story, to this drum, and they said, we want to help make a difference.
All right, that was 2014, very successful. A year later, summer of 2015, you go to Osborne High School.
Osborne is on the east side, in the 48205 zip code, formerly the most violent zip code, not just in Detroit, but in the United States. Osborne is the home to Osborne High School. And when we worked in that neighborhood, it was new for us to be on the east side. But we found a very welcoming community and school and staff because they'd heard about the work that was done on the west side in Cody. And so we went through the same process of meeting with the principals and finding out their needs. And they had several, but what rose to the top of the list in Osborne was a project that was not quite as sexy as a football field. It was a roof. Because when it rained outside, it literally poured in the building. And I saw the evidence of it. Trash cans scattered throughout the building, half full of dirty water that brought down mold from the ceiling tiles. And I experienced it one day when I had a salad and water fell and some kind of junk from the ceiling right into my salad plate.
It was organic junk, though.
Oh, I'm sure. I tried to tell myself that before I threw it away. And so we decided this was a non-negotiable project. Out of the many projects that they brought up, this one had to be done. So we did end up building a new gym and a weight room and a cafeteria and a main office and a parent resource room and a college room. But all of that would have been in vain if we didn't fix the roof. So we ended up inviting several local area contractors that donated their services, and we were able to take on a multi-million dollar job for only $360,000.
Once again, very successful. 2016 summer, Denby High School.
So every neighborhood has its unique story, and one of the most amazing things about Denby is that in the high school, they do a capstone project where the students, before they graduate, they're tasked with the challenge of identifying a real problem in Detroit and then coming up with a solution, whereby then they create a thesis and they defend that thesis, similar to a master's degree. Starting in 2013, the number one issue that rose to the surface was kids were saying there was nowhere for them to have fun and feel safe at the same time. The solution that they identified to that problem in Denby, that's what they were saying, they couldn't have fun and feel safe in Denby, was to build a park next to the high school on city property. So they began designing the park with an African-American architect from the University of Detroit Mercy starting in 2013. They completed that just before Life Remodel came there, not knowing who would build that park, believing if they design it, someone will. And that's the kind of project that we look for. So we came alongside the kids, we assisted them in their vision, and we built this gorgeous park with all kinds of incredible amenities, a unique park in the city of Detroit.
I quote you now, every phase is about people transformation, those served and those who are serving.
Yeah, the projects are really important, right? Because as I mentioned, reducing blight reduces crime, improving buildings makes buildings safer for kids. They're not getting rained on. They're not getting mold falling on their heads. And they're believing in themselves more. They're believing in their future. But the whole process is about people. It's about the change that takes place. And there's a reason we don't call it Detroit Remodeled. We call it Life Remodeled. The reason is because whether you're a wealthy donor living in Northville or Grosse Pointe, or a single mom or a child growing up moving from house to house in Detroit, we all need just as much life remodeling. And I would be the one to say I first and foremost need a lot of work in my life. Jack, I think, you know, you can tell that just by looking at me, right? And so the whole process is about how people become better together, and we change our minds on a lot of subjects, whether it's spirituality or whether it's race or whether it's socioeconomics. So we've got a lot of great stories of transformation.
All right, let's jump to 2017. From July 31st through August 5th, in a little more than a month, you're going to mobilize 12,000 plus volunteers, and you're going to go into ground zero of the riots.
This year is very significant, and that's actually been a big factor in us realizing we're going to need to prepare for way more than 10,000 people. So we're planning for a minimum of 12,000, might get up as high as 15,000. Because you talk about the 1967 riots, or depending on your perspective, it might be called a rebellion or a civil unrest. There's a lot of factors that led to 1967, but it all started in the neighborhood where we're working, and this year happens to be the 50th year anniversary of that summer that rocked our city, really brought our city to its knees in so many ways, and even sent a message across our country to many of the problems that plague us. This year is an opportunity to celebrate progress, because there is real progress since 1967. But it's also a very blighted area with many challenges. And so it's a year to come together and say, we need to work together, city and suburb, church, mosque, synagogue, government, business. We all need to come together, and we need to unite in this community and to be a blessing.
And you're going to renovate Durfee Middle Elementary School.
So Durfee Elementary Middle School is right next to Central High School. Central is the first high school in Detroit's history, has the highest number of Jewish alumni of any Detroit school, used to have 4,000 students back in the day. Now they only have about 300. So they've got a building that's way under capacity. What the school system has decided to do is move all of the kids from the adjoining Denby Elementary Middle School, K through 8, into Central, consolidating into 1K-12. As you know, Jack, there's a lot of vacant school buildings in Detroit that are eyesores because even though they were beautiful and had millions of dollars poured into them, they're sitting, they're rotting, they're being vandalized. The school system said, Life Remodel, we would like for you to take Durfee for a lease of $1 a year for up to 50 years and repurpose it into a community innovation center.
143,000 square feet. Give us more detail about this innovation center.
Well, let me start with the building, because if anyone takes a look at our website and sees that gorgeous neo-Gothic architecture with a slate roof, marble on the walls inside the building, wood paneling. I mean, there was so many resources poured into this building when it was originally built. So it's stunning to look at. But the vision is even better, because the vision started with the principal of Central High School, who originally wanted us to build a business incubator on the first floor over at Central so that we could create proximity between students and entrepreneurs. And he wanted the entrepreneurs to guest lecture in the classroom. One thing led to another where the school system said, we love that idea, but we want you to do it at Durfee because we're moving the kids to Central. As we began to look at Durfee, we realized not only could this be a business incubator, but it could become a home for after-school programming, as well as more real-world, hands-on educational programming that could happen during the day.
We're talking to Chris Lambert, founder of Life Remodeled, www.liferemodeled.com. If you want to help, July 31st through August 5th. Don't have to know what you're doing, just they'll find a spot for you, and you'll make a difference. And I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasulin, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Chris Lambert, who he and his team of 12,000 plus are going to renovate the area around Central High School in a little more than a month. Recently, you spoke to an atheist gathering.
That was a first, and I was really honored to be invited because, Jack, as you know, my life mission is I want to be like this 2,000-year-old Jewish construction worker who I believe was brutally murdered and came back to life, and he's alive and well. And I think we all know I'm talking about Jesus, right? But I'm all about bringing people together from all different religious perspectives, atheist, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, you name it. And I believe that it's good for us to disagree, but not to be disagreeable. And so to be invited into an atheist gathering, them knowing how passionate I am about my faith, was really an honor, because I love people just the way that they are and respect them for who they are. And that's really, we talked about the common good that we have in common. We both want to see Detroit become even better than the great city that it was. And that's true for the atheist community, and that's actually true for the Muslim community. The Nation of Islam started right across the street from Durfee Elementary Middle School. That mosque is still active to this day, and it's actually now a part of traditional Islam, of which we are partnering with them. And I've just gotten word from the Michigan Muslim Community Council. They are going to send many, many, many volunteers. I can't say the number on air yet because we need to let them do that in their time, but it's going to be a lot. And then, great news, this week we also just confirmed, actually last week, that the Archdiocese has committed to send, again, many volunteers. I'm going to say thousands. I can comfortably say that. And we've been so excited to partner with the Archdiocese. That's a partnership we've been really hoping for. And it's just amazing to see that the seminary, Sacred Heart, is located in this community. Mm-hmm. And so the seminary has really been leading the way, along with the Archdiocese, to say, let's bring all the parishes to the table.
On June 28th at 7:30 a.m., you have a special breakfast called Detroit 100, Chris.
We're calling it the Detroit 100 because what we're doing is we're rallying the business community. We're inviting 100 businesses to each donate $1,000. They'll attend this breakfast, hear the vision, and support this business incubator and community innovation center. Because what's interesting is we're in the city of Detroit where there's about 85% of the population that's African-American. Only 15% of businesses are African-American owned in the city. And so what we'd like to do is help increase more equity and more inclusivity among African-American business owners, help them launch more successful businesses, not only in Detroit, but also in this community that was once a very rich and vibrant business district back in the 60s.
If you want to learn more, www.liferemodeledwithaned.com. You're very Pollyanna. Let's be real, Lambert. These residents see themselves as victims. The crooks in the long run will prevail. The crooks say all these heroic efforts are simply a temporary setback, Lambert.
My answer to that would be to say, let me introduce you to the community. Because, you know, we can hear things from afar. We can base things on a few experiences we may or may not have even had. But when you go into Central, you're going to meet residents that are unbelievably resilient. They didn't leave when things got tough, right? They continued to work and to work hard and to build their community up. Let me give you an example. Some days I wake up, I live at 7 Mile in Livernois, a nice part of town. And I'm not really motivated to mow my own lawn. So I have to work up to some stamina to say, I'm going to get out there, I'm going to mow my lawn. We're talking about blocks where maybe one family lives on the entire block, Jack. So the question for them that week is not just, am I going to mow my lawn? It's, am I going to mow my block? And we have experienced such love and such warmth in the community. And we've also experienced some who were not excited about Life Remodel coming for a variety of reasons. And one of the greatest stories that I've seen is of a woman named Pandora, who we met in 2015. She was the number one antagonist, totally against the project. She said, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. It's a bunch of talk. You need to get out of my neighborhood. By the project time, 6 months later, Pandora became one of our closest friends. She ended up recruiting dozens of residents to work with her. She got elected to the Osborne Neighborhood Alliance Board of Directors. And she continues to serve there to this day, and she serves with Life Remodeled every year.
I quote you again, we do not serve neighborhoods, we serve with neighborhoods.
Right. We go into neighborhoods where the community is already at work. There's already grassroots efforts. There's already leaders and students who have a vision for the future. And we don't import a vision from the outside. We say, what is your vision? How can we help you accomplish it? How can we come alongside and assist with you leading the way? So we have a community advisory council that's guiding Life Remodeled on what to do, on how to do it, which houses to board up, what Durfee should look like, what kind of businesses and nonprofits need to be there, how those details all shake out. And then again, just making it about elevating their influence, getting their neighborhood to be more known and more more appreciated, not only by the local community, but by the surrounding region.
Each year, Chris, you, your volunteers, and God have to come up with about $5 million in cash, labor, materials. How do you get it?
So this story is interesting to me in that, Jack, I used to hate fundraising. Like, I hated it with a passion. And when I was a pastor and I preached, I led at a church, I only talked about tithing one time my entire pastoral experience because I didn't like talking about money. So we started Life Remodeled in 2011, and I didn't even know what a foundation was until 2013. I had no professional fundraising, no professional training. And now I can honestly say I love fundraising because I don't look at it as asking for money. I look at it as finding out who people are, finding out what they're passionate about, and helping people see how their passions may align with what God's doing here in Detroit and through Life Remodeled. And I get to meet a lot of people along the way, make a lot of friends, and they're very generous here in Detroit. And I know your listeners are the same way. They have a passion for the city. They want to give to something that actually works. And when they see that it works, they're going to give their whole selves.
The rebirth of downtown and midtown and now the new center is unbelievable. And everybody's jumped on board. Worldwide, Detroit's famous. But some say, if we don't fix these neighborhoods, what good does it do? You're a person that's doing miracles, or God's doing miracles, through you and your team in the neighborhoods. Talk about how important these neighborhoods are.
Downtown and Midtown make up about 7.2 square miles of our city that's over 140 square miles. The heart of the city is not downtown and midtown. The heart is people. The heart is not a place, it's people. People live in the neighborhoods. Kids go to school in the neighborhoods. The neighborhoods have a tremendous amount of work ahead of them. I love what's happening downtown. I love what's happening in midtown because, yes, it needs to start here and it needs to spread there. But I want to say the mayor, the city council, and so many in the business community and the church community already have been doing phenomenal work in the neighborhoods. We've got streetlights now, thanks to the city. We've got buses running on time or very close to it. We've got trash being picked up, neighborhood police officers, thousands of houses being knocked down. But all of that is really just the beginning. Things that we wish would have happened decades ago, they're actually happening now. And these schools, education has got to be somewhere where we all want to send our kids, or all of this new growth that's happening in the city, it's going to leave. And even those who are in the city now are going to leave if we're not able to improve education and reduce crime and increase jobs in the neighborhoods.
As our time winds down, Chris Lambert, would you lead us in a closing prayer, please?
I would be honored. And so I'll start by saying, dear Dad, I am so grateful to be on this show with my brother, who I know has a passion for you and your kingdom, and for all the listeners that are joining in this who love you, who love people, and who believe in Detroit. We know that you and you alone are the only one who can really lead us into flourishing. We pray that not only for ourselves, but for our city, for the people, for the children, for the mothers, the sons and daughters, the fathers, and all the community around us, that we would unite this year more than any year before, and that in your name we would bring about love and justice and peace. I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Chris Lambert, what a shining example of a wild stallion that has truly surrendered to God. And the results are miraculous. Keep up the great work.
I appreciate you, Jack, and thanks for the encouragement.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.